our policies so that they were telling the government, like, we as the city of Kimberley, we as the city of, you know, Burnie or Burnaby or wherever, think that this is important policy. So we had pressure not just from the people, but from all of these different kind of like levels of government, showing the provincial government that this was something that mattered to every single person in every single municipality in BC.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, for sure. And I see that. And you already talked about it a little bit, so that poor people or people with low income, it is a great opportunity for them. So how will universal free contraception impact the issues of period poverty?
Yeah, so for a lot of people, when they are on certain kinds of contraception, they don't get a period, which mm-hmm. is amazing mm-hmm. For period poverty concerns. And yeah. I think just creating awareness of, like, your menses matters, you know, like, what the symptoms that you have while you're on your menses and how we treat them matters, as well as how we access things to help treat our menses. And so if we're taking medicines that are making our menses more manageable, mm-hmm. That is helping with our bleeding, that's going to mean that we need less materials for our period. And then also we're going to be saving on the medication, so we can take all of that medication savings and be putting it into these still way too expensive period products mm-hmm. that we need, you know?
Yeah. Okay, I can understand that totally, and it makes a huge change. So I'm from Germany, and period products are so expensive, so I wish that we had the same law too. So I hope there will be a change soon. So it is great what you have done so far, and I wish for that, like, that would, like, that more countries would do that too. And how do you think that how will it influence our female future in general? So how does it influence our whole future? So if you look, like, I don't know, like 3 years ahead, how does it, like, influence our future?
I think a lot of people are gonna feel like a lot more supported mm-hmm. by their healthcare systems and supported by their government. Mm-hmm. I'm trying really hard not to cry because it's, like, such an emotional issue, but, like, sorry.
Take your time. It's okay. It is great.
It was really amazing to see our government do something positive mm-hmm. that we've been working towards for so long. Like, mm-hmm. over the past couple of years, especially in BC politics, like, there's so many things that we can get frustrated at our government for. There's so many things that can make us upset. Mm-hmm. Working in healthcare, like, healthcare has been very tough over the past couple of years since 2020, if you know what I mean. Like,
yeah.
And then seeing like politicians listening to the words of all of these advocates. Like, there's people of every different profession and background and everything in the access seat. Team and we all knew that this was such an important issue, and so having it, like, come to fruition is like, oh my gosh, we made mm-hmm. a difference, and it's yeah. going to impact people immediately yeah. every single day yeah. that somebody goes to pick up their free contraception, they're going to be so thankful that yeah. they have access to that contraception, and that they're saving money, and that their government values them, and that their government, like, understands mm-hmm. the importance of this for, like, women's health and for uterine health. It's a huge deal.
Mm-hmm. It is, for sure. And you can be so proud of yourself that you and Access BC did this amazing change, and everybody will be so thankful, and everybody will think of you every day and be thankful for you. So you can be really proud, and I'm so grateful that you let out of these emotions, and that you can share what you feel about it, because it is so, so important, and it is, for sure, it just so shows us how, like, we still have so much to work on, but it is a huge step in the right direction, and it is so great. And I was like, I read an article about it, so the first time I heard about it, and I was so grateful, and it's such a great opportunity, so you can be really proud of yourself. And yeah,
awesome. Yeah, yeah. So much.
So would you like to add anything as we almost close out here for today's interview so far?
Yeah, so there is campaigns in almost every single province and the UConn, there's campaigns in a bunch of different provinces to help those provinces get similar policies to what we just achieved here in BC. There's a bunch of political parties in Alberta, Manitoba, Ontario, Quebec, Nova Scotia, and the Yukon that have made commitments, like, campaign commitments to implement universal free contraception coverage should they be elected. So looking into all of those parties, helping support the rest of these grassroots campaigns so that we can make this, like, a Canada-wide policy and have this be something that Canada is, like, BC's leading Canada right now, and Canada could be leading, you know, like, a good part of the world. We don't always have, like, the best healthcare policies for everything, but this is something that we can, like, really be taking a huge step towards all across Canada. So I really encourage people to check that out. It's all on our website. If you go to the Access BC media, in our press release, there's links to all of the different campaigns that we need to keep continue supporting. And also, while you're on your website, sending that thank you letter, like I mentioned, that thank you letter to our politicians, and then also encouraging them to consider including the patch, the ring, and some of our, like, low OCP choices.
And if you want to look for the website, you should definitely check out our archives. I will also link the Access BC website on our Intravenous archive. So you should definitely check that out. Do you also have other social media web pages that people can check out?
We have social media on Facebook. So it's Access BC on Facebook. And that's where I think we do most of our posting and links. And we keep our website really up to date as well. So, like, most of our media stuff will be up on the website as well.
So you should definitely check out too, and also on our archive on Intravenous. And now to my very last question. So why do you think free access to birth control is so important for our society?
50% of our population needs it, man. Like, that's a lot of our population, right? And a big thing is that when studies show that when women and people with uteruses have access to the things that we need to take control of our health, we are able to do everything that we want to do. We're able to participate, we're able to have children, we're able to have children and participate and just be engaged in every single aspect of, like, life, academia, like, the economy, all of these different kinds of things, because birth control is a human right, and our reproductive system is one of the biggest systems in our entire body, and every single piece of our entire body affects how we're able to, like, function in this world. So by supporting access to contraception, we're supporting access to, like, fully functioning women and people with uteruses, which is super important.
For sure. And yeah, thank you so much for answering all of these questions and for opening up about the free birth control and the new law. And yeah, thank you so much. And I have one last question. What's your favorite song, or what do you have a song that's, like, inspiring or kind of fits to today's topic that you want me to play on air for you?
Oh my gosh, I don't even know. It'd probably be something my blog. Been listening to a lot of Blondie recently in our house. It's like a new baby. a new baby girl to add to, like, our feminist crew. So anything by Blondie, I think, would be my request.
Blondie? Okay. Okay, for sure. I will definitely play the song, and then we can listen to it right after this interview. And yeah, thank you so much, Caitlin, for being here, and yeah, for answering me all of these questions about the free birth control. And thank you so much again for your work and what you have done so far for today's, like, law, and that people can now access free birth control, which is not, like, I don't know. I don't have any words for that, because I cannot really describe my emotions as a woman, and I'm really thankful, and you should be aware of that every day. And the women are really, really thankful, and yeah, thank you so much for your work. That's all what I can say. you do amazing.
It's my pleasure.
Okay.
Democracy Now, hosted by award-winning independent journalist Amy Goodman. Tune in to your daily progressive news, aired Monday through Friday at 11 a.m. on CJSF.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizowitz, and this is Climate Connections. In cities, you may notice some roofs that are covered with plants. Many of these green roofs are planted with a low-lying ground cover like sedum. Other more elaborate ones include a variety of plants.
Ranging from small flowers, grasses, shrubs, up all the way to trees.
Catherine McConnell of Brown University says replacing dark rooftops with vegetation provides many benefits.
Green roofs can help control stormwater runoff if you have sort of a sudden precipitation event. Green roofs can provide amazing pollinator habitat for urban biodiversity, and they also can be really fantastic public spaces for people.
Green roofs can help cities adapt to global warming, too. They can insulate the building below, which saves energy, and some even provide local cooling. But in a study in Illinois, McConnell found that green roofs varied in their ability to reduce surface temperatures, as well as the amount of water and maintenance they require. So more research is needed to assess different designs and maximize the benefits of green roofs as the climate warms.
We want to figure out ways of adapting the places we live so that people experience less of those heat impacts.
Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
Come back to the ease of you, running in the circles. first of all, and who are you and why are we here today?
Thank you, and hi. My name's Angie Brooks Wilson. I'm the new Dean of Science here at SFU, and I've been in the role just over a month. This is following, our discussion here is following the ceremony to honor the women killed at the École Polytechnique on December 6, 1989, and to talk about diversity, equity, and inclusion in STEM.
And you were talking about gender-based violence is connected with racism as well. Why is it connected and how is it connected?
I should say that I'm not actually an expert in this particular field, which I think would be more sociology. So my answers are more the, you know, based on the life experience of one person rather than being correct in a social science sense. But I think that I tend to view discrimination against one group is connected to discrimination against another group, perhaps relating to people who feel the need to discriminate because they want to feel superior to someone.
And you talked about how women in the field of scientists are treated right now. And do you see a development right now in Canada in the field of science?
I do see changes. I have seen changes in how people behave towards women in scientific workplace over the course of my own career. It used to be more that certain ways of joking around that could make women feel not included were commonplace in the workplace. And now I don't hear very much of that at all anymore. So I do think that things are changing in terms of how people behave in the workplace. And I also think that things are changing in terms of processes that we use to try to ensure equity, diversity, and inclusion in places like SFU. So for example, when a hiring is done for a professor position, we have formal ways of looking at the applicant pool and making sure that, for example, the short list should reflect the diversity of the long list and should not be moving towards just a subset of that list.
And where do you still see room for improvement, or what can people still do better right now in Canada or all around the world, because there's still problems, right, or things that can be better? Or what do you think about that?
It's a hard question to answer. There definitely are things that people need to do. I think so much of the issue lies within each person. How do you re-educate a person who maybe was brought up to think that certain groups are not their equal to understand that they really are? I don't know how to overcome that problem. But I think that in workplaces like at SFU, where they're very organized, we have systems and a very clear intent to move toward equity, diversity, and inclusion, I think that people in workplaces like ours can become familiar with those processes and work in an environment that really is aspiring to EDI and become, I hope, more enlightened by doing that.
And do you think women in science or in a male-dominated work field are still underestimated, or are they more appreciated now? Because the work and their work, is this more appreciated than when you began to study, for example?
I think appreciated might be too strong a word. I think that being accepted and treated as equals, I think we are slowly moving in the right direction. But we're not there yet. I think we'll be there when the numbers are equal in the various areas.
You talked about you were in SFU here for 1 month, right?
I've been in the role of dean for just over a month, and I've been at SFU since 2008.
Wow.
In various ways.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice. And you talked about plans for the future. You're comfortable to share this with us as well? Like you talked about you don't have an exact plan, but you talked about plans in general or ideas for the future. You want to share this with us?
I can share a little bit of it. So I'm very big on making plans with the faculty. I have a lot of ideas for all aspects of how we run the faculty, but I want to also welcome ideas from the grassroots, from all of our professors, our grad students, and so on. And we will have a formal process of strategic planning to do that. And I'll knit together my ideas with the ideas of our professors and students to arrive at a good plan and specific goals. For the goal of increasing equity, diversity, and inclusion in the Faculty of Science, we have one action that is upcoming. The previous dean, Dr. Paul Kench, started a position called the Associate Dean for EDI. And that position was occupied by Dr. Mary Catherine Kropinski for a couple of years. And Mary Catherine moved up to a position of special advisor to the Vice President, People, Equity, and Inclusion. And so the role has been vacant for a few months. So I have discussed with the department chairs that we will be reactivating that role, and very soon we will be calling for faculty members within our faculty to apply for that associate dean position. Once that person is selected, they will be the lead person for initiatives to increase EDI in the Faculty of Science. And so they will lead an EDI committee. They will be able to help organize ideas to improve EDI. They will probably look at all our processes to ensure that they are robust in terms of considering all groups equally. And so that will actually be a very important position. And so I will work with and provide ideas to that person.
Nice. That sounds very good. Good plan
Thank
for
you.
The future. Mm-hmm. You also shared your own story at your speech here at SFU. And there also, do you have any tips for girls who are struggling with gender-based violence in the field of science? Do you have any tips for those who are struggling with it still? So because you shared your own story and you talked about that you were not had not the courage to speak up against the men, but because the men had no power over you, it didn't change anything for you. But what do you have a tip for a girl who is still struggling with a man that has power over her?
Oh, that's a really difficult question, because if you're referring to women in other countries where they're working under a regime where women are not considered equal, my life experience doesn't give me much to advise them. So I think that's a very tough issue, and I just wish them the best in their you know, fight for equality. For female STEM students here in Canada, I think that my advice would just be stick to your goals and try not to be deterred by bad attitudes by some other people. Most other people are good and supportive, and it's a few bad apples out there that would try to deter female students. But I would just say stick to your goals and perhaps seek mentorship from a female faculty member, or band together with other female students and share your experiences so that you have a support group with each other. And yeah, just stick to your goals.
And do you have any last words for us, or any statement or a tip or something else?
No, I would just say thank you for using your radio station to raise awareness of this really important issue. As we heard in the event today, one of the young women who spoke said that she hadn't realized that there was discrimination against women in STEM until she saw it herself. And so just knowing that it's there and being ready and being aware of the issue, it's good of you to raise awareness. Thank you
so much. And you can rehear the interview on cjsf.ca. And thank you so much for this interview.
Ooh, I'm feeling like I used to. Ooh, I'm feeling like I used to. people fall out of love, 'cause one of them can't stop thinking of girls who really know how to. You'll be the judge.
Something curious, something cultural, something unserious, sometimes serious, something mundane, something everyday, though not even really that. Tune into Typically Tuesdays, airing every Monday, you heard that right, Monday, from 3 to 4 p.m., your hour of quasi-cerebral talk and tunes.
On average, every 6 days, a woman in Canada is killed by her intimate partner. The women in our communities deserve to feel safe from both emotional and physical abuse. They deserve men who control their anger. Most importantly, they deserve to know the people they love most will never hurt them. Men like me stand up to create a safer world for the women in our lives. And we're looking to men like you, the men who make up our communities, to join us. You can play an active part to end violence. Visit www.whiteribbon.ca.
Did you know the Simon Fraser Public Interest Research Group, aka SFPERG, has been leading social and environmental activism on campus for 40 years? SFPERG is student activism by students for students. Do you have a vision for a brighter future? Are you passionate about changing the world? Visit us at www.sfperg.ca. That's www.sfpirg.ca to learn more about getting involved today.